Tonight, KNBR presents another in its series of youth forums, How to Make It Happen. Our moderator for this evening is Yvonne Davis, age 15, a junior at Lowell High School. Ms. Davis is also active in the Western Edition Youth Council and is Secretary of Young Adults Incorporated. Here is Ms. Davis.
Good evening. Welcome to How to Make It Happen. I'm Yvonne Davis. Tonight, we're honored to have San Francisco's new superintendent of schools, Dr. Thomas Shaheen, as our guest. Dr. Shaheen has generously accepted our invitation to be here for an exchange of views on education. Our young panelists are all students in San Francisco public high schools. As students, we all have ideas on how school can be better and how we want to get Superintendent Shaheen's reactions to some of our ideas. First, let me introduce to you our panelists. Louise Williams, age 17, a senior at Polytechnic High School. Jeff Kwan, age 17, a senior at Galileo High School, president of the student body at Galileo. Marcy Barris, age 18, a student at Opportunity High, and also at San Francisco State College. Octavio Diaz, age 18, a senior at Mission High School. And Mike Schweitzer, age 17, a senior at Lincoln High School. Dr. Shaheen, we know you have a tough job. We've been making our way through the public schools for several years now, and we know there are many problems. So the first thing we want to do tonight is to give you some help. Sometimes we donate ourselves to complaining about things. Tonight we want to be more positive and offer our ideas on some solutions. First off, I'd like to ask each of our panelists this question. What is the first thing you would do if you suddenly were made superintendent of schools? Mike of Lincoln High, why don't you start off?
Well, if I was a superintendent, I would try to equalize the materials used in the high schools and junior highs at least. For instance, some schools right now are using modern equipment and up-to-date textbooks, while others are using old equipment, for instance, audiovisual materials and outdated textbooks. And I think that one step to equal education would be to kind of balance things out and to have a trade-off between some of these schools to equalize the standard of materials being used in the schools. And also, all the schools are overcrowded, but I would try and get the percentages equaled out so that they would all be overcrowded and over the capacity of their building by at least an equal percent. Because right now, certain schools are running half empty and certain are up to double their capacity with students. That's about it.
I see. And Marcy of Opportunity High?
Well, if I were superintendent of high schools, I think that I would change most of the high schools to the way Opportunity High School is now. We have 200 students in our school and 15 teachers, and there usually isn't more than 15 students in each class. And this gives the teachers the ability to get more personally involved with each student and for the students to get to know the teachers more. Plus, we are able to have classes that are more like college classes rather than high school classes. We have anthropology, sociology, psychology, things which aren't offered in the regular high schools right now.
Louise, what about your views on this? Louise is from Polytechnic High.
I think that I would try to eliminate as many responses to some of the problems in high schools from the community and the parents today, because I feel that the parents and the community people waste a lot of time when the students and the teachers who are attending these schools would be able to work out the problems because they're dealing with them each and every day, where the community and the parents would only come in, I'll say, 2 or 3 hours out of the week to discuss and try to solve the problem.
I see. And Jeff of Galileo High School, what are your views on this?
Well, I think Mike and I are going to the same school, actually, because his problems are just similar to ours. And as well, Dr. Shaheen came to Galileo before, and I guess he's more familiar with the problems there, the small school that we have, than anyone else here. And, like, there's almost 3,000 students attending our school now, and it wasn't meant to be that many students in our school. So now we're having about 28 army barracks down at the West Campus, which is 3 blocks away from Galileo. and it's like a separation there. And if I was superintendent of high schools, I would like to, you know, bring the West Campus and Galileo closer together than three blocks.
Okay, and Octavio of Mission High School.
Yes, well, as it stands now, Mission High School, they raised the price on food in the cafeteria. But that isn't what I really want to talk about. I want to talk about counseling. Counseling, they should go deeper into the problems of the student, not just do their job, but gain their confidence. To gain their confidence in order for the student to give more of himself to his education, to help him out with the problems not only in school, but also, if they could, at home, or family problems. They should go deeper into why he should take what classes, and why not to take them. That's about it.
I see.
I can think of.
Well, thank you, panelists. That's quite a large list. Dr. Shaheen, you've had a little more experience than we have in the superintendent's office. How do you react to these questions? Let's see, let's take them one at a time. We'll start with Mike of Lincoln High School. Now, Mike stated that he felt that all schools should be equal as far as equipment and materials. What are your views on this?
I think this is a problem that's common to most school districts, certainly common to school districts where there are differences in the ethnic groups, differences in the amount of money that dad and mother make, depending upon which part of the community they may live in, the type of home that they have. I think Mike has hit upon a very, very crucial issue. I already see this to be a problem in San Francisco. There certainly ought to be an equalizing, it doesn't have to be exactly the same, and I don't think that's what Mike meant, but there ought to be at least as much money available to be spent within one school as another. Now, of course, it may be that annually now, and this I'm not sure of, it may be that now the amount of money that's available to schools is equal throughout the district. But we have to remember that schools have been around for a long time, and some school districts, perhaps in the past, have been much better off. And though you may provide an equal amount of money now, you don't catch up unless you begin to either move equipment from one school that has it to another school that doesn't have it, or move some of the equipment, or that you place more money in the schools that don't have it than in those that do have it. So I think Mike has hit upon a very significant question there, and one that I hope that I can be of some help to in San Francisco.
I see. Marcy Barris of Opportunity High spoke on schools in terms of them being more like Opportunity High School, where there are fewer students per teacher, therefore making the education more personal. How do you feel about this?
I like the idea, and am I allowed to just chat back and forth with Marcy on Opportunity High School? Because one of the things you can do for me today is to give me some background. You know I'm still a newcomer, and there's so much that you can tell me. I want to talk, Marcy, a little bit with you about Opportunity High School. I had the pleasure last week at the banquet for athletes at the Cow Palace of seeing one little segment of the Opportunity High School group, and that was the group that put together the, that was a group that was involved in the photography program. These boys and some girls went around the Cow Palace taking pictures of many of the celebrities there, many of the youngsters that were at the program, and they developed the pictures right on the spot for us. They gave us pictures as souvenirs. This is a very practical application of what the students were learning. I think this is a good thing. Now, is this typical of what goes on at Opportunity High School? Do you do this type of thing and things similar to it?
Yes, well, usually the things that you learn in class, like probably the kids that you saw at the Cow Palace, we're in the filmmaking class, and we have all different kinds of classes, you know, that whatever you learn in class, in other words, we take that outside and we work with it outside. Opportunity High School, I was, before that, I was at Washington High School, which is a much larger high school. And Opportunity High School has, oh, they help you with getting a job. And the atmosphere is a lot looser. In other words, you are able to do what you want. You don't have to follow, you don't have a book. You don't have to follow the exact rules of being in class when a bell rings. There are no bells in the school. In other words, you are made responsible for your own education, like you are at college.
Actually, what you're saying, I think, is what I hear students saying across the country. I've had the opportunity of meeting with many, many different groups of students, and they're saying that, and to use the words of students, they want their education to be relevant, they want it to be meaningful, mm-hmm. they want it to be something that they can use. I think the students are right when they ask for that, and if Opportunity High School is doing that type of thing, I think that's great. I would raise the question, and maybe raise the question and answer it myself, that it certainly does help to do this type of thing when you have a small high school, but that doesn't mean that it cannot be done in a big high school. And I guess, Jeff, when we were at Galileo the other day, we were talking with the staff, at least, and I think with the students, about whether we can take the big school of 3,000 pupils and subdivide that into smaller segments of the school so that a variety of things can be done. For example, in a school with 3,000 students, even if you're very, very good, it becomes difficult to participate in some very worthwhile activities. For example, suppose you have one three-act play. Only a certain number of students can be in that. You have one three-act senior play, for example. Now, if you subdivide the school into three parts of 1,000 students, then you'd have three plays, and there'd be much more participation. Now, the same thing can be done, I think, Marcy and the rest of you.
Well, that means that you would the classes would also be smaller, and the teachers wouldn't have such a heavy load on them. It's like 30 students in a class. Instead, there'd be the most would be 15.
Yes, and I would hope, I guess if I hear you correctly about Opportunity High School, it's that you're able to get outside the building and learn outside, and this is one of the most exciting cities in the world, and there's a lot that can be learned outside the halls of the school building.
Well,
and I hope we can move in that direction.
Well, what we also do at Opportunity is we have a job program that you get school credit for, which I don't think any other high school has. In other words, when you go to work in the afternoon, you're getting school credit for that in what you're doing. And I know that this school, I mean, I can only talk personally for myself, but I know the school has really helped me because I'm 18 years old now. I just turned 18. And I have 20 credits to make up there, and I'll be able to do that by November. And usually it would take 6 months to make that up. And at the same time, they got me into San Francisco State College as a freshman. And I'm also carrying the same load as a regular freshman would. And so, you know, for me, since once upon a time I was sitting in an office, you know, with a piece of paper and a pencil dropping out of school, you know, it's really great.
Well, I think what you just said is probably the greatest testimony to Opportunity High School that anybody could give. Well, that's wonderful. So let's have more Opportunity High Schools or something like it.
Great. Now, Louise Williams of Polytechnic High School spoke on teachers and students working together to solve their problems rather than parents and the community being so involved or as involved as they are. How do you feel about this?
I think this is an area where you need a partnership, and I think I know what Louise is reacting to. You do feel that perhaps at least some degree of the concern for the school is being taken out of the hands of students and is moving into the hands of adults. I had the opportunity of discussing the Pauly problems with both students and with adults, and I know there are many adults that are anxious to help. And I guess if I understand you correctly, Louise, and you chat with me back and forth if you'd like on this, do you have the feeling that adults are moving in too strongly and that students are having less than enough to say about the school?
No, not exactly. I'm saying that the community and the parents Their involvement into the situation at Poly High School is great, but I feel that if you know, the teachers and the students would be able to sit down and solve the problems, it would be a lot easier, because we're the people who are dealing with the problems during the day. Like I said before, the community and the parents, they'll discuss the problems 2 or 3 hours out of a week, but they're not there constantly every day, you know, day after day. They don't have to sit into a classroom, you know, and concentrate on the subject that doesn't mean anything to them, or they don't have to teach by a plan that they don't really like themselves, they can't relate to themselves, you know. This reason why I ask the teachers and students be more involved in trying to solve the problems was because the community and the parents really don't know anything about them except for what they hear.
I think probably, if I may react to that, somehow we ought to involve students more. I would accept that. I would at the same time be concerned that you don't leave the parents out. And I think there has to be a way of getting a partnership between the parents and the students and the teachers. Now, whether you're disturbed or not, or whether you're interested or not, or whether you are pleased or not, that the parents are involved, I guess that you and I have to admit that parents are going to continue to be involved in this. So somehow we have to find a way that they can be of greater help to us rather than less help. And sometimes, I mean, I can feel for you. Sometimes there are people who come to my attention that I wish would stay away, but they're not going to go away. So we try to find a way of working with them.
Well, I wasn't, you know, saying, you know, just like get rid of them, I mean, get away from them, because, you know, I feel they should have a voice in some of the things that should happen in school. But I'm saying that most of your concern, I'm saying what I would do if I was superintendent of school.
Good.
Most of my concern would be directly to the teachers and the students. I mean, I would listen to the community and the parents because they're taxpayers. And not only that, they want the education for their children, just like I would, you know. But I'm saying that you can only talk about things and really, you know, really talk about things that you know for yourself, that you've been through. I mean, you can say what you've heard or what you've been told or something like this, but telling from what your own experience is a lot better than just hearing.
All right, very good. And I think probably one of the individuals that you can tell, and maybe this is another advantage of this program, you can tell me, and I'll try to be of help to you.
Thank you.
Now, Jeff's problem with Jeff of Galileo High School spoke on more classroom space, which is related to Mike's suggestion of Lincoln High School. And he also talked about the large population of the schools and how they should be divided. Do you have any suggestions on this?
It's very obvious to me that there are two very important factors to be concerned with school buildings. One of them is the overcrowding in many, many instances. I think, secondly, and Galileo is indicative of this to some extent, it's the lack of adequate facilities and actually the age of buildings. And these two things are contributing to each other. For example, at Galileo, I know their athletic facility is very inadequate. Their indoor facility, their gymnasium facility is very inadequate, and this must make all kinds of problems or provide all kinds of problems. We're in process of developing. It's going to take many months, and I hope the students will want to get involved in this. We're in process of developing a master plan for the school district, which will look at many things. It will look at school buildings as one of many of the areas that are important. San Francisco needs both new schools, and it needs renovation, improvement of the facilities in many of its present buildings. That's another one of the imbalances that Mike was talking about. See, Mike was reacting to equipment, and he mentioned very briefly the facilities, but I think that's a very, very important thing. There are schools in certain sections of San Francisco that are wonderful, that are modern, that are up to date. There are other schools serving the same number of youngsters or approximately the same number of youngsters, which have very serious and urgent need of improvement. The school building makes a very important impact upon education. Some people say in every community, what difference does a school make? Students will learn anywhere. But you and I, who have been in school buildings, know that the school building does make a difference.
Octavio Diaz of Mission High School spoke on better counseling and also on food in the schools. How do you feel about this, better counseling in the schools?
I ought to talk about food. I just had a light lunch, and I'm all for better food at reasonable prices. And I know the concern of which you speak about food. At the same time, as unfortunate as it is to raise the cost, I guess there's no better bargain in food than the school lunch. I mean, the reasonableness of the price is, I guess, well documented. But I wish there were some way that we didn't have to raise prices there. But that, I guess at this stage, from the best of my knowledge, is beyond at least the control of the superintendent. Let me talk about the counseling, because this is a very, very serious concern, again, not only in San Francisco, but across the district, across the country. I had the privilege, as you may know, Diaz, of being in Mission last Friday, I guess it was, and I spent about an hour and a half in the building, and your very fine principal took me around and showed me some of the problems. And one of the problems he very honestly showed me was a problem in the counseling field. And I was quite distressed, as he was, to find out, I guess it was 6 days, 7 days after the opening of school, that there are a substantial number of students that had not even had their programs and that were waiting for their programs to be determined so that they could begin school. This type of thing we have to find an answer for, and I understand this is not uncommon in some of the other high schools in San Francisco. Students ought to be ready to move into a school program when school starts. And if it takes more counselors, or if it takes an improved quality of counseling, if it requires a different type of scheduling, if it requires greater involvement of parents to make sure that the students are available at the right time so that courses can be determined, all of these things should be done. There's really no way that we can support a situation where students 6 and 7 days after the opening of school are still waiting for their classes so that they can begin school. I want to help you and help students to improve this situation.
I see. Thank you.
Now let's get on to some other questions we might like to ask Dr. Shaheen. First off, Dr. Shaheen, a businessman complained to me last summer that he's interviewed some high school graduates who can't read. How is it possible for a boy or girl to spend 12 years in San Francisco's public schools without learning to read?
I was hoping you'd ask an easy question before we got through here. Let me say, and maybe I can react to something very interesting. Octavio and I were at this banquet that I mentioned last week at the Cow Palace, and I had the pleasure of sitting next to Colonel Stafford, whom you know is the astronaut who's been way up there 3 times. Very, very exciting individual. And I was quite interested to see some of the students who came up and talked with the colonel. And many of them, as you listen to them, obviously would have trouble in reading, although they weren't reading in front of them. Just the way they expressed themselves led me to believe that they might have some very serious problems if a written page was placed in front of them. But the amazing thing, and the thing I wanted to share with you, is the types of questions these young students asked were very astute. They were amazing, really, when you consider that perhaps they'd never gotten this off the printed page. They were asking about the scientific world that the colonel was so much involved in. They were asking questions that I could never ask, and I know how to read pretty well, at least I think I do. But somehow they had picked up, and I would think something like radio, and if I may mention it, something like television, had given some background to students. And what I'm trying to say is that as unfortunate as the inability to read is, and we have to do everything possible to improve it, let's not assume that somebody that can't read is hopelessly out of this world and not able to make a contribution. I mean, that's one point. Now, let's come directly to your question. How is it possible to go through 12 years in San Francisco and other school districts without being able to read? Now, I guess we need perhaps first a determination of what the businessman may have meant when he said they weren't able to read. Does this mean that they weren't able to read to handle his job? If so, why did he hire them in the first place? I think businessman has a important responsibility to determine when he hires somebody whether this is an individual that can work in his business and in the activity. Now, one of the things that has happened in the school system is that we have not yet found the recipe, in many instances, to help youngsters read effectively. Now, some of the reasons for this are generally given a lack of money, lack of personnel. But I personally feel the most important reason is that there needs to be a change on part of adults and the adult teachers in attitudes towards young people. There has to be an expectation that young people can learn. And if we can do that, I think above all else, this will improve the reading ability. Now, I want to talk to another point on this. I know sometimes what not only businessmen say, but what other people say. They say if somebody can't read, don't move them ahead. Keep them in the grade until he learns to read. Now, this doesn't solve the problem. Now, I remember in my first superintendency, and I'm getting to be an old man, this is 25 years ago, the first major problem that I was asked to solve was what to do about a 16-year-old boy that was in the third grade. Now, you heard me correctly, a 16-year-old boy in the third grade. You know why he was in the third grade? They were waiting for him to learn to read. They were going to keep him in the third grade till he learned how to read. Now, this was a horrible place to put him in. Obviously, if he hadn't learned by this time, by sitting in the third grade for what must have been 7 or 8 or 9 years, I forget the number of years, he wasn't going to learn then. That young man got a very rapid promotion. He went from the third grade to the ninth grade overnight when I found out where he was. For more reasons than the reading thing, he needed to be away from those little 8-year-old girls. He had to be out of that classroom where he could at least have some hope and where the others weren't frightened. Now, when he got into the ninth grade and he began to feel that maybe there was some hope, he moved ahead. He probably never would have got a job with this businessman here, but at least he was doing much better. He would have stayed in that third grade the rest of his life if we were waiting for him to get enough information to get to the fourth grade, see, based upon that. So that's a concern that I have in answer to your question.
I see. Thank you. Now, panelists, are there any other questions that you might like to ask the doctor? Yes, Octavio?
Yes, Dr. Shaheen. Maybe you heard about it. I don't know. But last semester, we was trying to pass some sheets, you know, with written supporters on it, to try to get a mission complex down the Mission District in high school that not only the students could use it, but also the public, open on weekends. It was supposed to be some like field where they could play football, baseball, and other games as such. Because we have what is called Drew Field, and it's in the back of the school. It's about, I would say, 50 yards wide by 120 long, maybe. And that's with them. Our football team practices football. We don't have a baseball field. And we have to practice on Jackson Park whenever we do. And other schools do have facilities as such to practice and better themselves. And they were passing these sheets, and, you know, I signed my name, so did many other students. After the students finished signing it, they passed them around to the public supporters, which they sign, they have their signatures, phone numbers, addresses. And I was wondering whether they ever got to you, and have you heard anything about it?
No, you're sharing again with me an important bit of information. I gather what you're talking about when you talk about a mission complex. You're talking about a series of athletic fields. Is that what this was, from what you described it? No, I didn't know of that, and I haven't heard of that. But again, this comes back to the question that Mike was asking, I guess that several of the rest of you are talking to, about an inequality of facility across the district. And either the inequality has to be solved by being able to move some of you that don't have the facility to a location where there is a good facility, or something ought to be provided. I mean, it's difficult for a city and a school district like San Francisco to allow a situation, it's difficult to explain how a situation can be provided or set up where Mission and Galileo and some of the other schools are without adequate facilities, whereas some of the high schools have beautiful facilities available to them. So it would seem to me that, and I talked earlier about a master plan, that as part of the master plan of the school district, we should look at this. Now, there is, and it's difficult, of course, sometimes to seek solutions which involve money and to be accepted, but I think we have to recognize when people ask for something that there is a dollar sign tied around them, and that the community ought to be willing to spend the money to get the facilities and spend whatever money is necessary to solve these problems.
Okay, are there any more questions?